How's everybody doing today? Everybody awake, staying warm, or at least trying to? Anna was telling me it's a little bit warmer. Of course, when I come in, it's a little bit darker and colder, so I'm still wearing my coat out there. Probably will be for the next couple months, too. So I think everyone is kind of mentally on the edge of their seats, trying to see how 2021 will play out, especially after this past year where everything was sort of up in the air and uncertain. Especially with how the year closed, we thought we were finally getting past some of it, and it seems we're slipping back into more and more COVID-related disaster. But there is hope on the edge of the horizon there. If you guys would, I'm curious to see something here. I need this entire side. If you're willing and able, please stand up for me. All right, awesome, thank you. And then Mike Slater, could you raise your hand for me? Thank you. Everybody behind those guys, can you stand up for me? All right, great. The rest of you, you can relax. You're fine. Okay. Did anybody get to see the ball drop this year, Times Square? It was very empty. That was odd. Anybody make any New Year's resolutions this year? Has anybody kept theirs? Was somebody make an easy one that they could keep within a few days? I tried. My resolution was to make a New Year's resolution. I'm still not there yet, so working on that. Has anybody failed their New Year's resolution? Some people already have, 3 days in. Hey, that's fine. We're going to talk a little bit about that. So right now, I have roughly 80% of you standing, right? According to the U.S. News and World Report, the failure rate for failing New Year's resolution is about that 80%. And most people fail their New Year's resolution of that 80% by mid-January. So not even 2 months. So if you're standing, look around you. If you fail your New Year's resolution at some point this year, you are in good company. And congratulations to you, 20%. Great job. I'm looking forward to seeing what you'll do this year. Go ahead and sit down for me. You can rest those legs. So I'm thankful to know, and perhaps you will too, is that failure is not uncommon at all whatsoever within both the Hebrew Scriptures and the Christian New Testament. You have Noah's drunkenness. You have Abraham's impatience, Moses' murder and temper. You have Israel wandering in the desert because of their wandering faithfulness. You have Samson's pride. You have the failing of the Israel in Judges. You have the jealousy of King Saul. You see David's unfaithfulness, Judas's betrayal, first century Israel and Saul's blindness to what God was doing, Peter's denial and racism, and then the failings of the early church as evidenced by the letters of Paul and Peter and John. And there are so many more recounted that I didn't list. So whether you're in the midst of feeling like a failure through things like misplaced finances, losing a job, falling into bad habits, or you messed up morally like the examples before, we could all use some sound advice on moving past being a failure. So I'm going to use one of the examples that I mentioned earlier. Today's sermon is going to be how to fail your New Year's resolution, right? But I'm not going to tell you how to fail your New Year's resolution because you can figure that out. But I'm going to tell you what to do once you've failed your New Year's resolution. So in that sense, I'm telling you how to fail your New Year's resolution. How do we fail well? So we're going to look at 2 Samuel chapter 12. And while you're turning there, I'm going to summarize chapter 11. And by the way, this summarization is the JSVFC, the Jordan Summarized Version for Children. Because I know we've got everybody in here. And if you're familiar with 2 Samuel chapter 11 and 12 and this whole story, great. If not, go back and read this on your own because there is a lot of context here that would help adults understand this passage a little bit more. So, chapter 11 summarized for children. This David is a king of Israel who had been loved and blessed by God. But he was just as human as we all are. Even in his great splendor and all of his accomplishments as a king and before, he was still human and made pretty grave mistakes. King David stole something from this guy named Uriah. He was one of his soldiers. And David knew what he did was wrong. So David had failed. But the next thing he did is a great example of what not to do. David failed, but then he tried to cover up that failure so nobody would know, nobody would figure out. And he tries and fails to cover up his failure a couple times. But then he finally succeeds in more drastic measures. And instead of confessing ownership of this moral failure, he ends up effectively killing a man to hide it. He sends him off into an impossible battle. And not just Uriah dies, but people around Uriah die as well. But that focus is on Uriah, but all that just adds to David's moral failings. And so at this point, David may feel like he's gotten away with it. He's failed, but it's okay. Everything's taken care of. But God had other plans. See, God had this prophet named Nathan that would come and talk to him to try and convict David of his sin. So that's where we pick up in 2 Samuel chapter 12. When Nathan came to him, he said, "There were two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had very many flocks, very many herds, but the poor man had nothing but one little ewe lamb, which he had bought. And he brought it up and grew up with him with his children. It used to eat of his morsel and drink from his cup and lie in his arms, and it was like a daughter to him. Now there came a traveler to the rich man, and he was unwilling to take one of his own flock, the rich man, of his own flock and herd, to prepare for the guest who had come to him. But he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him." David's anger was greatly kindled against the man, and he said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, the man who has done this deserves to die, and he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity." Now, David at this point probably thinks this story is real. There was a real rich man and a real poor man, and this real example had happened where the rich man stole the poor man's only lamb. And this wasn't uncommon. People brought problems to David all the time, and he had to decide what to do about these problems. What David didn't know is that Nathan was basically telling a parable. And Nathan says to David, "You are this man." Then the story finally clicks with David, and he breaks down. He's failed, not once, but twice, maybe more. But this is where David's redemption starts. Though this redemption is the best path, it's not the easiest path. It's painful. Redemption in this sense is not immediate, and everything is fixed, and everything's hunky-dory, okay, we're moving on, moving past. No, there are real consequences. And to repurpose this failure for success, God had forgiven David of his sin. There were plenty of things for David to worry about that would shape him for success if he chose to let it. So later on, David writes a psalm to highlight this moment in his life. And we just listened to a part of this psalm. It's Psalm 51, and it's probably the second most well-known psalm in all of the psalms, probably following Psalm 23. I'm going to read this psalm to you. It is a beautiful poem that reflects all the pain that David feels here. So as a preface, as I'm reading this, just, and Greg will get into this later. He's going to teach a great series that will cover just how to read the Psalms, how to really listen to and understand them more. But as a preface to this one, is that these Psalms teach us more about the position of our hearts and how to feel, and are more poetic in nature and focus more on expression than it does about history and theology or what sin is or anything like that. So when we're reading this, I want you to just try to feel what David was feeling rather than get too hung up on the words that he uses. Because I know I have issues with that, so I have to tell myself to do the same thing. The heading of this is, create in me a clean heart, O God. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love, according to your abundant mercy, blot out my transgressions, wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I know my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you may be justified in your words and blameless in your judgment. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. Behold, you delight in truth and the inward being, and you teach me wisdom in the secret heart. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be made clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Let me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones that you have broken rejoice. Hide your face from my sins and blot out my iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from your presence and take not your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation and uphold me with a willing spirit. Then I will teach transgressors your ways, and sinners will return to you. Deliver me from blood guiltlessness, O God. O God of my salvation, and my tongue will sing aloud of your righteousness. O Lord, open my lips, and my mouth will declare your praise. For you will not delight in sacrifice, or I would give it. You would not be pleased with a burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit. A broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. Do good to Zion in your good pleasure. Build up the walls of Jerusalem. Then you will delight in right sacrifices, in burnt offerings and whole burnt offerings. The bulls will be offered on your altar. David's thoughts and feelings are all described here on that situation that we just saw. And most notable to me in David's psalm is his contrite spirit in response to his earlier thoughts and actions about what he did. If he didn't recognize his actions are wrong or accurately pinpoint where his failure was or who he sinned against, he may not have ever recovered from this. And we would have a very different story written in 2 Samuel. But he was broken before God, and he did seek forgiveness. And this is an important piece of the puzzle here. It's often hardest to get past in failure. Once we're in that broken or contrite spirit, we can camp out in that state of brokenness and forget to move out of it. David prays for a renewed spirit and asks for joy to be restored. And after lamenting his failure, and it was a huge mistake, but after lamenting that, he eventually gets back up, gets back to his duties as a king. There's a short scene in Batman Begins, if you remember that movie from roughly 2005, that pretty well encapsulates this. Bruce Wayne, better known as Batman, made the mistake of making some enemies in his training days that came back to haunt him, and they set the Wayne Manor on fire. And we're going to watch that scene here.
I hope you're not a member of the Fire Brigade.
Master Wayne!
What is the point of all those push-ups if you can't even lift a bloody log?
Thank you. family, my father built.
The Wayne legacy is more than bricks and mortars.
I wanted to save Gotham. I failed.
Why do we fall, sir? So that we can learn to pick ourselves up.
You still haven't given up on me.
I think that clip very well encapsulates what David was feeling. Because just like Bruce Wayne there, his entire world was on fire. Everything could come crashing down. David feels like he failed. And with all those consequences looming above him, feels like he might never get past it. And I'm sure that just like myself, you've probably felt that way at times before too. And if you haven't, well, I'm glad you're hearing the sermon now, because hopefully this will help you get past it or through it maybe a little bit easier, maybe a little bit better. So Alfred Pennyworth, Bruce Wayne's butler and mentor just after his parents died, reminds Bruce that getting back up is the next and right thing to do after failure. And after that encouragement, the hero ends up saving the day, or the night in this case. Our main point for this morning that I want you to really take away with, the one thing I want you to remember, is that God often shows his power and might through human brokenness. God's success is often shown through human brokenness. So how is David redeemed for God's success? Out of his failure, David had two sons. The first died. The second, Solomon, lived. Solomon grew as he watched his father chase after God and after God's laws, even after that mistake. And as David grew old, he gave Solomon the throne and these parting words in 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 2 through 4. I'm about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself to be a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. And just right there, David's fulfilling what he said in Psalm 51 about teaching sinners and transgressors his ways so that they won't fall like David fell. The Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons pay close attention to their way, to walk before me in faithfulness, with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. So as David is dying, he's just finishing prepping his son for success. That even through David's failure, God was able to work through David and show Solomon a great way to live. Now, David was redeemed, and he probably saw more success in his life than anyone. But Solomon is most likely that greatest success that David has. It's the best evidence of David's redemption. Solomon turns out to be known as the wise king of Israel. He's known as to be one of the wisest. He writes a majority of our Proverbs that we have written in the book of Proverbs. And it's also from that same lineage, David and Solomon, that we see Jesus come from. I mean, the author of salvation itself comes through this broken line and through this moral failing. And that even though that mistake was made, something so great can come out of it. So what do we do with failures ourselves living in the 21st century in 2021? What are we to do about failure, right? So we've gone through, it's February 16th, we failed our New Year's resolution. What do we do for that? Whether it's a moral failing, or whether it's just something simple as, I didn't keep that promise to myself to lose 50 pounds and go on a 26-mile marathon. Brad, if you want help training for that, I can run with you. So what do we do for that? The first thing we can do is own up to it. Take responsibility. Don't make that second mistake that David made and try and hide it. Own up to it. Take responsibility. Apologize. Make restitution. Do whatever you need to do in order to make the situation as close to right as possible past the fact. Ask for forgiveness if you need to. The second thing is feel that guilt. Embrace the guilt. Lament. Because this guilt that we see here that David feels, it's not a bad thing. It's a terrible feeling, don't get me wrong, but it's a good thing to have that guilt, because that's part of our moral compass. That's something that God has given us, given people, to keep them from doing what's wrong a second time or a third time. It's part of our being that helps us follow God. So feel that guilt, embrace that guilt. But if you're a person that knows himself or herself to be beating themselves up more than they should in these situations, that stays underneath that log fire or stays down and doesn't get back up after failing. Maybe you don't know that about yourself. Maybe other people do, though. This is where you can ask other people, say, hey, do I do this too much? You might be able to get some advice from a few people there. But if you know yourself to be one of those people, get some distance and look for perspective. Distract yourself if you need to, with entertainment or with work. Get away from the situation a little bit after you've put out the immediate fire, right? Take a step back, look at things, analyze it a little bit. The next thing is to know that it's not the end of the world, right? That's part of the perspective, but just know that it's not the end of the world. Whether you've failed drastically or just a little bit, there are better things to come. It's not the end of the world. In fact, as Christians, we've already overcome the end of the world. We're not worried about that because of what Jesus did on the cross. There's so much more to look forward to. So if you haven't already pinpointed what you did wrong at this point, try and find that. Get some counsel. Have somebody else come and help you find that out. You might be painfully aware of it. You might not. Somebody else might have a different perspective on that too. But figure out what it was and figure out what you would do differently. Make a better plan of action in order to move forward, in order to figure out how to be better if a similar situation occurs again in the future. And then finally, move forward. Move forward with courage. Keep living life and watch God for his success to shine through. So as I close here, if you failed, if you haven't owned up to it, we're here for you. The people around you are here for you. That rest of the 80% can feel with you about failing. And the 20% that did succeed can definitely help you as well. We're all here for you. There isn't anyone here on staff that's going to laugh or make fun of you or belittle you for making a mistake, morally or otherwise. God knows I've made mistakes in my life. The same can be said for everyone here. We all want to see the best for you, so if you need to get something off your chest, today is the day. Don't wait for that. I know that Greg and I would be happy to serve you. Greg's not here this morning, so don't go looking for him. But I'd be happy to serve you. And Greg here throughout the rest of the week, throughout the rest of the year. And if you need advice, we may be able to help you, point you in the right direction. So if there's a decision that you need to make, I want you to come up while we honor God this morning. Talk to us, talk to the elders. While we honor God in worship of the one who never fails. Today is the first day of the rest of your life. So make it great.